Welcome back. I don't see anybody. Is anybody there? Is everyone there? Is everyone back? Someone give me a sign.
Yes, everybody's back. Yes, everybody's
okay.
Back.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be with you invisibly. Okay, so I want to dedicate this morning's talk to Tisha B'Av, which is going to start at sundown tomorrow. And end sundown on Sunday. So on Tisha B'Av, as we know, we go down into the depths of what we would give anything not to have happened, not to feel, not to know. This is an incredible piece of our everyday meditation practice also, right? To bear the unbearable, to bring compassion to what's broken, to watch ourselves reflexively, habitually pushing away or trying to wish away what we don't want or what we desperately grasp for what we do want. So when we turn our awareness back to breath, we move towards, we move towards inner wholeness and outer interconnection each time we return to that breath. No matter what's flowing through the body, whether it's crisis mode or total calm or anything in between. Rabbi Arthur Waskow calls God the inter-breathing spirit of the universe. And so we must be too, because we're made in God's image. We're interbreathing spirits of the universe. So in my own practice of wrestling out meaning from our spiritual calendar, this is the time to start rereading the notorious and illustrious volume by Rabbi Alan Liu, Blessed Memory. And if you want, we can say it in unison. This is real, and you are completely unprepared. It's a great mantra. Oh, man. Rabbi Liu remarks that it makes sense that a journey over the next 7 weeks that carries us to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur should begin with alienation and estrangement. And that's the theme of Tisha B'Av. It's a time when both temples were destroyed, and it's a time to pile on all the horrors that have befallen us as a people, as holy humans on this holy earth. The temple was the place where one felt the palpable presence of God and performed rituals to connect oneself, korban, korbanot, to get close to the non-dual aspects of the divine. There is a Chabad teaching that expands this a little further, which is that it's not just the destruction of the physical center of our worship, but that the temple represented the ability of the human soul to connect with its divine source. So if you were following the calendar, we've been just living through 3 weeks of mourning that started in Tammuz last month. And now we go deeper to allow ourselves to acknowledge the estrangement from ourselves, from others, from the divine, from the source of our spiritual sustenance. And I'd add, from the estrangement from this good earth, this sacred source of our physical and spiritual sustenance. On Tisha B'Av, we take time to hit rock bottom, and we find ways to open our hearts with the help of the 7 weeks of consolation that will follow Tisha B'Av and bring us to the gates of Rosh Hashanah. We'll travel through the month of Elul, in which we get to practice Teshuvah, turning, returning, and being turned. Liu writes that the essential gesture of this time is to become more mindful, to wake up out of our dream or nightmare of the world. When I hear the word teshuva, turn, return, be turned, it sounds like the, you know, the apt description of our practice. I sit with the intention to turn towards the rising and passing of each new breath. Then the mind wanders, but then something returns me. Something brings me back to this breath. And I've gotten into the habit of asking myself if I can notice, does the mind tend to leave on the out breath? And what does it return on the in-breath or vice versa? And it's a challenge because you almost never realize when it leaves until it's gone. but that sometimes you can say like, oh, I'm back, and oh, here's the out-breath, right? Something like that. So ways to be more mindful when mindfulness is feels out of reach in that moment. So then we turn and we return and we are turned back to watching the breath arise into fullness. And we follow the gentle expiration as if it were the last breath that we would take, that we would breathe. And we watch with curiosity, waiting, literally breathless, in that gap between the out-breath and the next in-breath. It's an entire drama of birth, life, and death in a single cycle of breath. The slower our breath becomes as we sit in longer periods, the longer we linger in that no-breath space between the end of one out-breath and the rising of the next in-breath. When our mind wanders from breath, it's usually captivated by some drama of our stories, judgments, fears, doubts, desires, planning. And each time we return in kindness, that's a training in compassion. I was noticing because of the dysfunction this morning of how I was going to get on, how I was going to reach you. as I sat, there was like something flowing through me that was like an emergency. There's an emergency happening. And I do feel that in my body a lot. And if I can take time to bring some compassion, to hold it as I would like a scared little girl, as I probably was at some point. Now I'm a scared old woman. that to take time to hold it is really phenomenal. It's a phenomenal sensation. It doesn't always make the feeling of emergency go away, but there's something tangible, you know, in my consciousness that's walking with it. That's breathing with it. So awareness is always present, and we are always in present, but the awareness actually makes us feel this presence, that's the one and only presence of which we're all a part, an intricate part. So Tisha B'Av asks us to do what our practice asks us, basically, to not turn away from suffering, our own or others, of this earth. And for me, you know, I learned in a course with Maury Stein in that round part of Brandeis, that round building that's Perlman, I think it's called. Anyway, where the sociologists dwelled with all of their crazy experimentation, we learned co-counseling. And what we learned was that when there's a good balance between our attention of what's hurting, even sometimes unconsciously that we're not aware of, and something that's really life-giving and connective. When we have that balance of alienation and connection, that's when tears tend to flow. Sometimes if it's just the alienation, we're too stuck. But we all have that experience, you know, at least in reading a book or watching a movie or listening to a music, that we spontaneously start crying and we're not sure why, but it's because there's been something that holds in balance our suffering. So for me, this practice around Tisha B'Av comes with tears, with like tears that, which Rebbe taught this, one of the Hasidic Rebbe's say that when you do go into tears, to notice if it's the tears that alienate you more, right? Like, oh, woe is me, this is happening to me and nobody else, and right, that it solidifies the self. And the tears that connect us to the stream of human suffering, and to like to have camaraderie in some way with the rest of the human race, to be more deeply connected in those tiers. So our willingness to bring compassion to what ails us, I think, has impact beyond our seemingly separate self. It is something that allows compassion to blossom in the world in that moment, in support for all that is trying to live in ways that enable the planet and its creatures to thrive. There's no way that this thing that we do in our meditation is only for us. We may be motivated to do it because of that, but when we do it, it has far-reaching consequences. So on Tisha B'Av, we allow ourselves to be shattered, to be inconsolably brokenhearted. And I picture comforting a little one who stamps their foot at the right to feel miserable in this moment, to feel the unfairness of it all, the loneliness, the imagining ourselves as separate selves. And in the midst of that shattering, there is a return, a coming home to that which holds us close always, whether we feel it or not. And we feel it a lot of times when we're here together, which makes it very special to meet with you on Friday mornings. So what makes it more possible for us grown-ups to plumb these depths is that wisdom of the Jewish calendar, in which Tisha B'Av is then followed by 7 weeks of consolation that emphasizes forgiveness for self. Ooh, that's a hard one. For the other, for the earth. This is a journey from brokenheartedness back into wholeness and connection with the source, which can happen, you know, moment after moment when we sit. And doing this in community, as we do here together, provides safety to feel the lack and the loneliness of that small ego self. As the 20th century Kohain wrote, there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. That's how the light gets in. That's the space that opens for us to feel the nurturing of the next 7 weeks of consolation. The first word, I found this so interesting, that the first word of the Book of Lamentations is Echa. How can this be? And then it goes on to list horrendous, unspeakable things. How is there this cruelty and wanton greed that destroys life on this planet? How could it be possible? In Tisha B'Av, we allow ourselves to feel that horror. And Echa Yishba from Yeshiva, which Moshe referred to last week, reminding us that it's sitting. How is it that this city sits so lonely, Badod? And it seems that when the text wants to express deep emotion, this text of Echa, it turns to feminine metaphors, as if women's hearts were the keepers of that part of our humanity. The text reads, "She," which is the feminine of a city, "she, Jerusalem, is like a widow. The princess among states is become a thrall," which is a state of being in someone else's power. "Bitterly she weeps in the night. There's no one to comfort her. Her allies, all her allies, betrayed her and have become her foes. When she settled among the nations, she found no rest. All her pursuers overtook her in the narrow places, Hamitzarim," same root as Mitzrayim. So that's the first word we read on Tisha B'Av, Echa. How could it be? But what's God's first word to Adam and Eve? Ayeka. Where are you? Where are you at, really? Where are you at? God knows where they are, right? But what's going on inside? I think it's the first mindfulness instruction in the Torah, Ayeka. But instead, they go into hiding, afraid of being punished for what they're told not to do. And God throws them the lifeline, Ayeka. And with that one word, where are you at? Can you return into connection with this divine who's creating you in the moment? God's question opens a field of the possibility that we call mindfulness. What's going on inside right now? Right now. Any fear? Fears like this. Shame, confusion. We drop the stories. We settle into how these feelings are coursing through the body and breath. But no, instead, Adam and Eve are captive to their emotional reactivity that multiplies their alienation. It's the snake's fault. It's the woman's fault. They refuse to grab the life raft back into connection through awareness with presence, through connection to our source. And we know that reality well. We can watch that throughout our hours and years of meditation. So even the most committed of us, which is each of you, right, being here each Friday morning, who have practiced awareness for years, we get caught rehearsing that reactivity, bowing to reflexive defensiveness that strengthens our despair and loneliness. We get triggered and tightened into a narrow self, sense of self-defense, a self-imagined, a separate, alone in the world, cut off from the all, from the one, by reactivity. So in the next 7 weeks of consolation that leads to the opening of the gates of Rosh Hashanah, we're exercising the muscles of teshuva, of coming back into connection with the all, of laying our troubles and our glories and our mundanities at the gate that will open, the gates that will open in 7 weeks, when we'll take our steps towards atonement, reconciliation, renewal, and restitution. In those 7 weeks, we attempt to traipse through the terrain of separation, judgment, and towards compassion and connection. Then the gates of Rosh Hashanah will open, and we've been strengthening our muscles of compassion and the ability to rest in interconnection and intimacy once more. So in the next 7 weeks of Isaiah's Haftarot of Consolation, we seek that connection. And here's how Rabbi Lu describes our task in these weeks leading to Rosh Hashanah. We read the book of our lives, which is the Torah and the Tanakh. We read the book of our lives and what we see in our meditation. We see how our hurts hurt others, and we ask forgiveness. We evoke the power of our death to show us our lives. The journey that begins tomorrow night is one of self-discovery, spiritual discipline, spiritual evolution, and self-forgiveness. This period encapsulates the great journey all humans must make, from Tisha B'Av to Sukkot, from birth to death and back again to renewal. Every soul needs to express itself. Every heart needs to crack itself open. Every one of us needs to move from anger to healing, from denial to consciousness. And these needs are among the most ancient of human yearnings. Meditation sensitizes you to the inexpressible. It plays an important role in this journey of transformation. Meditation helps show us the truth of our lives and a space away from alienation and estrangement from ourselves. It gives us a sense of presence, of the transcendent, as well as living our tiny, vulnerable lives. So in our meditation, the heart discloses itself to us in the form of thoughts. I think that's it from Alan Liu. I love that line. The heart discloses itself to us in the form of thoughts that carry us away from the present. When we become aware of our own pain, we become more sensitive to others. pain to others' pain. And that's when forgiveness can take place. To be able to see clearly again, we experience fully this moment of burnout. And so can we learn to live in harmony with our mother, this planet, as well as with each other, our beloveds? And we know that often it's with our beloveds that some of the cruelest feelings are felt, as well as the most loving. So I think when we sit together here, it's an opportunity to love. Right? We see each other's faces and love pours out. And we rest in each other's embrace. Rather than trying to do something with or for each other, we give each other so much in this meditation community by taking care of our own hurts, made possible by the silent, loving presence of each one of you. Tisha B'Av is not only about mourning the destruction of the temple and the life that sustains us in this planet, it's also a day set aside for the birth of the Messiah, the beginning of redemption. What are the forces in our own lives, personally, interpersonally, in our communities, our nation, internationally? What is being dismantled, undone, destroyed that is not your choice? Yet what change in life requires you to dismantle perhaps routines and expectations and old habit patterns? Supporting each other, we form a community to do this work side by side. Can't do it without each other. We create a holy space together in which we can stand by each other, hold each other in a community of intention that helps us bear and come through the brokenness into wholeness. We can't do it without each person who is here today and who has come over the decades that we've been doing this together. In our ability to watch what arises inside and hold onto the other, we touch the reality of being vessels of the divine that gives us life and strength and the safety to look into darkness. The power of the Jewish annual cycle of holy days is that we get to locate the intersection of our own personal spiritual work with the support from the wider community. And I would say it's the community of all humans all over and all the creatures who are rooting for this emergence, this clarity, this connection, so wide that it includes the ancestors and all humans and creatures. So we watch how this path opens for us the entire range of inner and communal challenges of being alive in this human form. And last week, Reb Moshe mentioned the 6 days after the 9th of Av, the 15th of Av. In Hebrew, Tu B'Av, Tu is the abbreviation for 15. Always the full moon. And this is the full moon of Av. And on this date, when we lived on our ancestral lands, the women went out to the fields dressed in white and chose their partners to begin the new cycle of life-giving birth. What an amazing switch. And I remember once Reb Moshe said that how amazing it was that when his parents survived the worst brutality imagined, that their response was, let's make more life, which I think a lot of young people today don't have, right? They feel kind of despairing about things and why should we bring children in this world? But here's also on Tu B'Av, I feel like there's this sexual energy that makes us feel like anything is possible and that we're totally connected and that we want to live and we want to love as fully as we can. So Tu B'Av becomes this juicy blip on the road to consolation over the next 7 weeks. So thank you. Thank you for your kind attention. Let's just sit for a few moments.